kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I am alive and kicking. How are you, Joe?
I am alive and kicking as well. It is Tuesday for us, which means it is Thursday for the episode releasing, which means it is party cast time, which means Chris is here and Pernell are here. How are you two doing?
Yeah, partying hard.
I am dead and kicking.
Dead and yeah. Kicking.
Same.
That's right.
Just a bucket full of energy in here today, huh?
What is the cause of death?
Before this episode started, I legitimately was looking up like energy supplements and like nutritional supplements. I am fainting. Not badly enough that I can't do a podcast show, but definitely don't ask me to push any chairs or push myself because it ain't happening.
But push chairs.
That's right. No chair pushing for me. I can park my butt in a chair, though, and just use my mouth to say words. That is feasible. And I can use my fingers to press buttons. That is also feasible. But nothing else.
So you are fully qualified to be a video game podcaster.
You're damn right, baby.
We should take a second to say thank you to Unequalized, who raided us with a party of five.
Yeah, we just got a raid, five people coming by.
I think this is the most people that have ever watched us, and we're sorry.
Wait, we got a party of five going in here?
There's a whole 11 people watching.
We've had more during like contest episodes.
Look, I was trying to like make them feel better, like they were doing something special.
Well, they are special. They are all special for being here.
They're all wet pancakes.
We're jumping ahead here. We need to establish who's Nev Campbell in this group.
That'll be me.
Okay.
All right.
There we go. Chris is the hero of the story.
The funny part is I can't remember any of the other actors from that show.
I don't even know what show.
Party Five.
Oh.
God damn it. What was his name?
Scott Wolf.
Yeah, maybe.
Because he was in the Double Dragon movie.
Yeah, like I could see his face plain as day, but I saw him as the little dude from Double Dragon.
You know who was the other dude from Double Dragon? Or
Mark
I don't
Dacascus.
Know. But yeah, the person who hosts the Iron Chef America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is one of my favorite actors, believe it or not.
Oh.
As easy as it is. He had a movie, too, called Only the Strong. And it's like your classic 90s troubled kids learn martial arts kind of movie, but I absolutely fell in love with it, and I every chance I get to watch it, I'm like, everybody sit down and shut up, I have to watch Only the Strong.
I'm just laughing at the fact that is actually a trope of a movie. Troubled kids learn martial arts.
It was in the 80s and 90s. Like, man.
Although I agree, there was Karate Kid, there was Three Ninjas Kickback, Four Ninjas, Five Samurai.
Don't forget the next Karate Kid with Hilary Swank.
Oh, God.
That one didn't happen.
Yeah.
I won't let you forget it.
That one didn't happen.
Because if you do.
That's like The Crow, where I just like, they made one and they made two, and then after that, none of them happened. They stopped.
I still remember that. Except to
bring it back full circle, there was a TV show, and it was called The Crow, Stairway to Heaven, and do you know who played Eric Draven? Mark Dacascus.
Put him in the
bring it full circle.
Wow.
I
didn't know Party of Five would cause this.
Of course Party of Five would cause this. Come on.
Because you mentioned Double Dragon. Like, people rant on video game movies, but I think Double Dragon was like the perfect level of video game cheese. And so
have
many
you not seen DOA?
No. But I've also never
You need them. To watch DOA.
It was dead on arrival, so that's how she ended up missing it. So
yeah. But I mean, people shit all over Double Dragon. Oh, it was so bad. It was all colorful. It was stupid. Like, the game is stupid.
Thank you.
Should have been stupid.
Hey, two brothers marched across town to beat up dudes to save the girlfriend they were somehow sharing. That is a story trope that is old as time itself.
But it's stupid. But it was fantastically stupid.
It's here.
And I'll tell you how fantastically stupid it was. My nickname for my sister growing up was, there's a scene in Double Dragon where Bobo calls them ugly and homely. And so me and my sister have called each other that ever since I was a kid.
Homely?
Oh, wow.
She called me homely and I called her ugly and I still call her uggy. Like, it just stuck. And I mean, she's 50 now, and oh god, I just outed my sister's age, which means mine's not far behind. But but I mean, we still, like, when we sign notes to each other, we sign ugly and homely from Double Dragon.
I don't even get that as an insult, like,
because their last name was Lee.
Oh, no, that I get. I'm just thinking of it from the words perspective. Like, it's just seeing a person on the street, like, look at this loser. Like, he's ready to go home and bake a cake and give it and share it with all of his favorite people. What a loser. Like, I wish I was skilled enough to do that, because I would do that.
And but that's not what homely means. I mean, homely means that you're plain and not pretty.
I could have sworn home, but maybe I'm thinking about something else. I thought homie.
You're thinking homie, like homebody-ish. Yeah, yeah. Like, no, homely is like, you're not good looking. Ugly and homely. They're both ugly. And according to Boa Bobo.
Good old Bobo.
Yeah.
A Bobo.
Anyway. Games.
See, now I'm wishing
not movies about games.
Because that was segue into my review.
I just went all around the Mark Dacascos circle there. You got me started. I had to go.
Yeah, that would have been a good segue into Purnell's review, but his is later. We're starting with Chris.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Purnell, you're sitting on the sidelines for now. Are you ready? Chris, are you ready? Yeah. Is everyone ready? Are we going to talk about some games? Is everyone ready? This is exciting.
No, I'm not. I'm playing my headphones.
Are you ready? Make some noise if you're ready.
All right, now I'm back.
God, Jesus. I'm laughing too hard at that.
Make some noise if you're ready to rock.
Ready to rock my chair.
Get on your feet, motherfuckers. We about to review games.
Where's my cane? So
I
can
I got a spare. Do you need to borrow it?
Yes.
Yes. And of course, that's not a joke at all.
It's not. I have a spare.
How many canes do you have?
Two.
Me?
Just two.
How many are bladed?
Chris, do you have canes?
None.
What? No. We gotta get you a bladed cane.
I fall way too much for that to be a thing. Although I will say my main cane, the one that I prefer to use, as a metallic turquoise color with dragon scale, silver dragon scale pattern etched into it.
Really heard of it? Took somebody's dome.
Yeah, probably. It's very cool. As far as canes go, it's very cool looking. But they had like a limit on the cool canes because I was getting it paid for by my insurance and they didn't want to let me have the super pretty ones. And so that was as cool as I could go, was the one that had the... Some people say it looks like mermaid scales, but I prefer to say that they're dragon scales.
Some people are Maurice.
But then the other one is just like a plain cheap ass wood cane. It's just the backup in case I can't get to the other one.
So that's the cane that could whack somebody one really solid time, but then it would break.
It's fake wood though. It's metal, but it's got like a wood wrap on it. It looks stupid.
Oh, so it's metal, so you can fool somebody into thinking that they can't take one damage. Really, that cane could go all night. Wham!
Probably, yeah. Both of them are metal. Both of them would kick ass if they had to.
Rock! I like it. I better stop. I'm going to just keep sidetracking. We'll never get done.
Yeah, we'll never get to reviews. It's never going to happen. So
he was all accusing me of going like really super long. We're going to be on midnight because I'm reviewing games.
Oh, you still will. Don't get us wrong.
Chris, you go long and Purnell sidetracks us.
That's right. It's our rules, man.
And I'm just here to talk about Mark Dacascos.
Yeah, between the two of you, we'll be here until midnight.
And with
I believe in you. I believe we could get this done in a good, timely manner. I believe in all of you.
I believe in the heart of the cards. But
I believe in myself.
I like potatoes.
First game to talk about tonight is called Azure Lane Crosswave, developed by Idea Factory, Compile Heart, and Felestella, published by Idea Factory International, released February 13th on PS4 and Steam for $49.99. In the middle of each nation's normal training routine, a joint military exercise was enacted. A select few from each nation were chosen to participate in this rigorous event. But how did this event come to be? Are there other ulterior motives at play? Chris, tell us about Azure Lane Crosswave.
Azure Lane Crosswave. Okay, great. This is a rare Steam review for me.
Yeah.
Didn't actually do PS4 this time. Mm-hmm. Although it is coming out on PS4.
Yeah, yep, Steam and PS4.
Yeah. Okay, so I am a fan of Compile Heart and Idea Factory RPGs, because I actually, ever since I reviewed Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force, which I now own 3 times due to circumstances, I own so many of that game. So I've kind of gotten used to like their way of doing things, which is to say they like to basically do anime games where characters stand on 2 corners and kind of talk at each other, you know, like without animations, they just kind of bob up and down sort of things. Mm-hmm. And then there's a game in there somewhere. Well, this is the most that kind of game that I think they've come out with yet. Which is either good or bad, depending on how you like to enjoy your Compile Heart and Idea Factory games. So this is a kind of update on a mobile game that they came out with, which was just a straight up side-scrolling shooter where you picked a squad of little chibi girls and you would like blast ships on the water. Now, the girls in this game are actually ships or are actually girls with like mecha rigs that look like battleships. It's very confusing. They function like ships. They float on the water or kind of like hover slightly above the water. Their mecha rigs don't really seem to be like attached to them in any way. They just kind of are there and they look like ships like floating around them. And they're kind of like, like I said, they sort of function as like real people, but you know, with mecha on, and they take on the destroyer, aircraft carrier, yes, aircraft carriers, and like different like types of battleships that I don't know all the names of, except for the ones that are actually in the Parker Brothers game, or was it Milton Bradley? Who does battleship? Purnell, oh God, distract I don't
us. Know. I love how Purnell knows, but yes, it's
part. No, I just mean distract us while I Google it.
It's totally Milton Bradley, though.
Okay, cool.
You sunk my battleship.
The game purports to be all about getting out there into these battles where you float around on the water and you sink everyone's battleship. And these are, even more confusingly, real ships with like hulls and rudders and guns and things like that. I guess they call them the mass produced ships. I don't know. But anyways, basically the way it works is that when you get into a confrontation, it just takes you to a big patch of ocean with like, you know, invisible walls and things like that. You go through and just shoot everything. It is actually a shooter. It's not an RPG per se. And the way the shooting goes, it's kind of like all range mode in Star Fox or, you know, something like that. It's over the shoulder of your character and, you know, you aim, if a character's in a certain field, like a little white circle that's like, you know, on the playing field, then your character will just auto target them. And when you shoot them, their HP goes down. So it is a little bit like an RPG in that way. And of course you equip different guns and different like sub weapons, and you just kind of, the sub weapons are all on a timer, so you can be blasting your main blaster like constantly and then push like the other, shoulder button to send like torpedoes through the ocean, or, use your character's special, you know, boosted power or something like that with the, I can't remember what the button is called, because I use a PlayStation 4 controller on my computer and it treats it like an Xbox controller. So I can't tell you which button they're telling me to press. I think the Y button is that, but there, cause there's no Y button on the PS4 controller. Anywho's whatever. When, you know, when you're done shooting down all the enemies, the game will rank you on like whether you destroyed all the ships, whether any of your ships got destroyed, any of your girls, or, and the third one, and this is the real telling part, whether you completed the entire round in less than 2 minutes. So that is to say every battle in this game so far that I've gone through has been less than 2 minutes worth of fighting. So it is not like a lengthy shooting section. In fact, it kind of does feel like a mobile game in that sense. The action is over about as soon as it starts. And, you know, of course, with these trophies, you get bonuses, and with these bonuses, and money and things like that, you can not only, you get a currency for purchasing, upgrades to your guns and to your other stuff, or you can buy new ones, for every character, which is eventually a cast of about 25. All of them are like various levels of clad female characters who are also pretending to be ships. And the other currency is like this bonus currency that you actually use to unlock these characters. And, you know, you just, as the story progresses, more and more characters get added to that available roster. But of course, the main story follows just the main two girls who, you know, one of them is the overexcitable, like raring to go type. And the other one's the quiet badass who's like just trying to get a handle on this other girl. You know, every trope is here.
Nice.
Not a single one is missing as far as I can tell. They really put it all out there. Speaking of which, this game is about 90% fan service. Every girl in their poses, because again, these girls don't move around unless you're in the 3D mode, in which case, you know, it's a 3D, you know, just behind their back and they're shooting. But when they're actually doing like, the scenes, it's just these cutout characters standing, you know, on either side of the screen. Usually you can see their butt, boobs, and face all in the same shot at all times. And of course it doesn't breach into the overtly romantic, or they're very flirty with each other, but it doesn't go into like, you know, adult territory or anything like that. It's just fan service and playful. So here's the thing. This game talks so much between these rounds. You will basically, like, you move your chibi character around a map and you find event markers. And with these event markers, of course, you get more storyline, which are, of course, unfolding in a kind of visual novel style. And, you know, like the way that these games tend to. Again, it reminds me a lot of Fairy Fencer F. Sometimes you could have, and, you know, these cutscenes are entire conversations or entire events that happen that you just kind of get to watch, and they're all voice acted, but only in Japanese. There is no English voice acting in this game. And yeah, there's actually at one point between two battles, I had 7 events come up.
Wow.
that I had to watch. It was literally, I think, about 35 minutes of watching two characters stand on the side of the screen and talk to each other before I could get into the next thing. So
wow.
I would, yeah, it was a lot. I would complain, except for two things. And this is fan service notwithstanding. You're either a fan of fan service or you're not. This game is 90% fan service. So if you are into that, then you can fast forward to the end of my review. I'm sure you're used to fast forwarding. But anyways, so there's two things that I forgive this game for doing all this for. One, it's actually written well. It's intriguing. it's an unusual story, so you don't really know what's going to happen. You know, it's pitting four different, like, kind of, you know, pastiches of America and Germany and England and Japan in, like, a kind of World War II era thing. So they all kind of had this uneasiness about each other, and, like, there's different, like, kinds of political drama that happen as well as interpersonal drama. And again, we're dealing with 25 ladies here, so it's like, you know, each character has, like, something to say to the others.
What are you trying to say, Chris?
I am saying...
Ooh, yeah! It's That's 25, what I came here for.
It's 25 characters who like to talk.
That sounds overtly sexist, Chris.
Well, you know what? I'm reviewing a game that's 90% fan service. So,
you like to talk. We're sitting here listening to you talk.
Yes, it's true. And if this were Azure Lane Crosswave, I would not exist because there are no males in this game. And the conversation would just keep going. No, like that, you know, like, I'm just saying that the cutscenes are long.
Just dig in your hole deeper.
This is great. You're going to get that cane out. Well, the pattern. Wham!
So, Chris sitting over there fixing it in his seat like, fuck, I get into now.
So, that's one point, is that I like the dialogue. I like that the story is, like, cool and that, you know, it's kind of like there's more going on with it than what you would think. The other thing is that the action's actually pretty fun. I like running around and, you know, blasting these guys. And, of course, like, with the huge amount of, like, upgrades that you can do to your characters and weapons and things like that, it actually does keep you coming back. But, you know, at the end of the day, it really kind of acts like just a super fancy, like, mobile game. So it's, you know, kind of half a mobile game and half a visual novel. And on that, it's strong on both points, but it's not like a straight up shooter. It's not a straight up RPG, and it's not just a visual novel. Although you can crank the difficulty down so low that you might as well have it as a visual novel because you'll basically win.
Nice.
Like you can put it together a squad that'll basically win the entire match for you. So
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Well, overall, $50 on this one. What are you thinking?
I think $50, it's not the strongest thing that Idea Factory and Compile Hard have put out. I would say that's Barry Fenzer-F, or maybe one of the Neptunia games. I don't know. I haven't played enough of them. But I will say, I mean, this does its job of taking a really weird premise that, again, is very fan service-y and actually making something good and interesting out of it. So for that reason, I would say, you know, if you're not already the kind of person who's just going to buy this because of what it is worth it. If, again, the idea of a visual novel or like a very simplistic shooter appeals to you, otherwise, it's a bit expensive being a full price game. So I would, you know, maybe say check out something else that they've done.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Psycheo Shooting Stars Bravo, developed by Psycheo and City Connection, published by NIS America, releasing February 18th on the Switch for $39.99. Experience the blistering action of six shoot 'em up classics from Psycheo's greatest hits now in one collection. I guess they should say another six shoot 'em up classics.
Right?
Right.
And yeah. One of them is not a shoot 'em up.
Really?
Spoilers.
Ooh, well, yeah. Chris, tell us about
them up.
A what?
Is it a cute them up?
No. Well, actually,
I'm hanging up now.
It's close. It's close, Pernell. Okay. So, Psycheo Shooting Bravo. Very happy to be reviewing this one because it has some of my favorite Psycheo games on it. So, this one is neatly half games that are in the Gunbird series, all of them, and half games that are in the Samurai Aces / Sengoku Aces series, which is all of them. So this is all of the Gunbird games and all of the Samurai Aces games put together. Anyway. So for $39.99. No, just kidding.
What is your verdict?
There's a okay, so there's a little bit of history lesson here is that Saikyo, of course, was born out of the ashes of the company that made Aero Fighters. The first Aero Fighters, I think one of the main designers of Aero Fighters just didn't want to be a Neo Geo exclusive company, so he started Saikyo with some other people. And their very first game that they came out with was Samurai Aces or Sengoku Aces. We'll get to that in a minute. So, and as such, Samurai Aces plays a lot like the game that, you know, came before it, Aero Fighters. It's a top-down shooter where, you know, like many of their games, you know, especially like Strikers 1945 and stuff like that, you know, you shoot these real, you know, it's sprite-based, you go around these really nice backgrounds and shoot these enemies. It's all kind of, you know, Japan's version of steampunk. It's, you know, feudal Japan era, but like there's robots and things like that going around. Also kind of like the Aless series, which was around at the same time. You get to pick from six characters who each pilot a different ship. And, you know, of course, again, since this is born from Aero Fighters, the cast is unusual and sometimes quirky. In particular, there's a dog who is noted as being a super genius. And there's also an old man with a puppet who kind of looks like a crazy Geppetto type. And his bomb is actually shooting like supersized like puppets across the screen and things like that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And, you know, basically, you know, they took that and then they made Gunbird soon after. And, you know, Strikers 1945, you know, history happens. And then they came out with the sequel to it, which is Tengai. It's called Tengai outside of Japan. It's actually, but in this collection, it's called Tengai. It's actually Sengoku, Blade or Samurai Aces 2. There's some title weirdness going on here. Then they figured out that the best way to make this game is to actually turn it on its side and make it a side-scrolling horizontal shooter. And this game is actually, it's pretty close to like Darius, which is my favorite series, in that it, like the other game, features power-ups, except, and I want to come back to Samurai Aces for just a second, the thing I can't stand about Samurai Aces is that the power-ups stay only in the top half of the screen. There's an invisible wall keeping you from being able to reach them from your safety zone. So if you want to power up, you got to like either use a bomb or get right up into the enemy's faces. It's the only game that does that. It also does that thing where if you're on the last few stages, of course, this is a typical Saikyo shooter, is that the first few stages are randomized and then the last few stages are static. And on those last few stages, if you get a game over, regardless of how many continues you use, you have to start the stage over. So although the digital re-releases of these do let you crank your available lives up to 9 and your bombs up to 5. So you got plenty of chances. And of course it has the 7-layer difficulty system, which goes from normal to easy to very easy to child to monkey. So you've got that on most of these games. And of course, you know, your 3 hard levels above that. So you got that to rely on. But yeah, Tengai actually, has an interesting power-up system, is that the first time you power up, you actually get a familiar that will either double your shot or do their own shot, and you can keep powering up, and either you'll get another familiar or a more powerful shot or something like that, or you can charge up a shot, and that will be like a super-powered, can actually take down bosses almost as good as bombs kind of shot, only it's free use as long as you can charge it up, which, as fast as the bullets and enemies come at you, that's going to be tough to do. But, yeah, I actually found that I liked Samurai Blade / Tengai way more than the first game. Tengai, by the way, is one of the characters in the game, and they just randomly decided to make him go from being, like, a calm but powerful Buddhist monk to, like, a totally angry guy. And, I mean, I don't know whether it's fitting or not, but in both games, he has the most absurd eyebrows in the world, so.
Nice.
It's, yeah, he's just got, like, he's got a bald head, but these giant attack eyebrows, it's fantastic. And, but yeah, like, just a much better game. It's like, it's not just an Aero Fighters styled game or something like Gunbird with less humor. Not no humor, just less. it's actually like really good, probably my favorite on the collection. But then we get to Samurai Aces 3 Sengoku Canon, also known as Sengoku Canon, on the Nintendo Switch. Now, this is the exclusive of the group. This was a game that was developed by certain people that worked for Psycheo, but years after the company went down. So, you know, they went down in the early 2000s, and this was made in the mid-2000s for the PSP. So this is actually a PSP game.
Interesting.
Yeah. So they took the same formula that the second game had, but they decided to make fully 3D backgrounds that just kind of scroll by. And they're these just kind of low res, like polygons that don't really have much to do with the background. Like, it's often just going to be like ground is going by and the sky is just kind of static and doesn't have anything in it. And then sometimes like a 3D thing will show up, but like it's weird. However, it introduces a thing called the canon system, which I actually really enjoy. It is where, while you're doing your regular shot, which of course is the constant just stream of bullets, you can also push the canon button, which you can set yourself. It's by default, they're on opposite ends of the controller face buttons, which is ridiculous. Anyways, I said it right, where while you're doing your shot, you can push the canon button, and that will shoot a much slower, you know, you can only shoot like one at a time, but it's much, much stronger. And if you take down an enemy with it, their bullets all turn into coins that are automatically added to your score, and they become score multipliers. So it becomes not only an issue of like, this is the best way to get a score, but it's also the best way to stay safe in a game that's constantly throwing super fast bullets at you. I don't know what they were thinking with this game, but the bullets are insanely fast, which, you know, disqualifies it from being considered a bullet hell, because bullet hells usually have slow bullets.
Yeah.
And your character is also really fast and really tiny. Like, it's really funny to me that they combined the sprite-based shooter like with the 3D backgrounds, because sometimes the camera will like pan all the way into a building, but your character is still like this tiny like collection of pixels on the screen, and like they're like 9 inches tall compared to this building like that it's zooming in on until like it's practically running the camera into it. And by the way, the very final stage in a normal playthrough is completely black in the background. I've never seen that in a shooter. Weird. There is no background in the final stage. And I'm like, what happened? Did it break? But like, I guess it's just a thing that happens. Yeah, this is the weird one, kind of the weird one of the group, because again, it was not made for the arcade like all the rest of them, and it just does some weird things with the property. But it has one of my very favorite lines in it. Okay, so there's a character who's in two of the games, and yeah, sometimes he appears in other Psycheo shooters, but his name is Aeon. He's just a blonde muscle dude with a ponytail. And in each of the games, his mission is to rescue his sister who gets kidnapped. Like, that's just woven into the plot somehow.
Okay.
And in this particular game, his intro text is, "How could I let my little sister be kidnapped again?" And then in parentheses, "the third time." Which is totally wonderful, and like, you know, that's Psycheo to a T, really.
Lord.
So that's the three Samurai Aces games. I quite like Samurai Aces 3, and the only thing that kind of confuses me on this collection, and it confused me at first, is why they didn't just, you know, force the names to be consistent, because they are consistent. It's Sengoku Aces, Sengoku Blade, and Sengoku Cannon. And that's literally A, B, and C, is, you know, Aces, Blade, and Canon.
Yeah.
Like, they could have just done it that way, and then we would know they were all three games that are related to each other, but it's instead Samurai Aces, Tengai, and Samurai Aces 3, Sengoku Canon. Anyways, none of that really, yeah, that doesn't really matter. It's just minor. And then, of course, there's the two Gunbird games, which I've covered before. These are probably the most popular of the Psycheo shooters. They star a much wackier cast of characters, including, you know, like a Monkey King, you know, what do they call it? The Forbidden Legend or whatever type of character, except that it's a lady. The, you know, the young, very, very young witch, Marion, who is like kind of the star. Like, she's kind of like the Psycho like mascot. And, you know, she's trying to, in the first game, of course, they're all trying to like, you know, which one is which? They're trying to get a wish from a genie or something like that, who turns out to be like this weird cat thing. And then, the second game is all about, putting some potions together so that they could fight God and ask God for something. And God is, of course, a weird orange pig with frogs for angels. Yeah. And, you know, they both have Marion, and they both have a robot in them. And that's about the only thing that's the same. They got like an old man who, his ship, quote unquote. Oh, by the way, in the Samurai Aces thing, only in the first game do people fly ships. You actually fly the characters themselves for the other two games. But in Gunbird, they fly ships. Well, they fly different things, I guess, depending on the character. But yeah, the old man who like has a helicopter that he pedals, like a bicycle helicopter kind of thing. And the second game is even better because it has like a comedic version of Alucard. Like, not the Castlevania guy, just, you know, the son of Dracula, like vampire, whatever,
yeah.
Who is trying to find a cure for baldness because he wears a wig, and also a cure for his smelly feet.
Oh my God.
And, these are these are the games that are both the ones with the most personality, but also like the most like bizarre kind of borderline offensive jokes, and tons of fans. Actually, all of these games, this is the fan service pack if you're looking for, like, you know, cleavage and stuff like that in a shooter, which of course is Psycho's jam. But yeah, this is the place where you're likely to find the most of it. And, you know,
so
of course,
fan service week on the show.
It really is. Yeah. And yeah, like I said, they do a lot of off-color jokes in Gunbird and stuff like that, which you'll either appreciate or not. I mean, it's 90s Japanese game. It's, you know, bound to happen. No. And of course, if you wade into Psycho at all, then, you know, these are the people that made Mahjong into like a practically pornographic game about shaming women. So that's just what you're going to get. And then... so like I said, Gunbird 2, and then they have Gun Barrack, which is an interesting one. And this is the one that I said is not a shooter. This is a kind of puzzle game, a semi breakout clone with a little bit of pinball in it. Starring just Marion from the Gunbird series and this guy with an anchor that he flies on an anchor. I don't know anything else about his motivations. But yeah, like the whole point of the game is just to go through stages and try to, clear blocks with a ball. And, you know, there's various obstacles and things that happen that get in your way, like on off switches for like unbreakable walls and, you know, just different things, multi-ball. And, on your character, instead of it just being a bar, it is actually a pair of pinball flippers. And the purpose of those, you know, if you let the ball just bounce right off of them, then that's fine. But if you actually activate the flippers and hit the ball, then that will make the ball go much faster and change direction slightly. So you can kind of use that to your advantage. It's actually a really interesting thing. But yeah, I mean, as far as these games go, this one is the most minimal. It is basically just playing through stages and there's a little bit of story. But it's kind of really badly translated, so one can't get too much of a sense of the story. So I would like to finish out talking about Gun Barrack and the reviews in total by just reading the text that that they put in the eShop for Gun Barrack. Do you want to hear that? It's two sentences.
Yes.
Okay. Well, the title is Psycho Revival, Play the Good Old Game. Gun Barrack launched an arcade version in 2001. It is a new game with elements of puzzle and shooting in the late works of Japanese brand Psycho. In Japan's amusement arcade, there is always one popular game.
It's like that's poetry.
It. Where's the rest of it?
That's it. That's all it says.
Oh my God! It's just like it was like they're setting you up for this really cool finale on the stage. Like, nope, that's it.
No. Anytime you're in the eShop and there's a Psycho game, go read the text because they're always hilarious. and somewhat nonsensical.
That's beautiful. But the six of these games together in one package, $40, what do you think?
Well, the thing is on this one is that they are some of my favorite games from this company, but also there's only one exclusive that is not available to purchase separately. So if you have most of these games, I'm not sure I can recommend it just based on the inclusion of Samurai Aces 3. Because that one, again, you're playing basically an HD up converted, you know, PSP game, and that's going to have limited appeal no matter what. However, if you're just getting into Psycho and you enjoyed the first collection, this second collection, I think, is also really good. Again, I can't recommend it based on some very outdated references and humor. But as far as like actual shooting action goes, this is some of the best of the bunch. So I would say, yeah, I would do recommend it. But again, like I said, all of these games except for Samurai Aces 3 are already available separately.
Yeah.
And of course, NIS was nice enough to come out with a really nice, physical collection of all these. Which is really good. And I was definitely eyeballing that until the review fell in my lap, so.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
All right, well, next game to talk about is called Code Shifter, developed and published by Arc System Works. It released January 30th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99. The story takes place in the development offices of a software company, Awesome Rainbow Core. Trouble arises just as you're gearing up to release the final version of the game. Many mysterious bugs are occurring, and time is running out. Purnell, tell us about Code Shifter.
Well, Code Shifter takes place between two environments. There is the actual office space where, as you said, Awesome Rainbow Co. works and does their business. And it is in this space that you control a young lady that goes by the name of Stella, who is a rather earnest young lady who loves her pink hoodie. And that's all you need to know. She has an awesome hoodie. And she's essentially decided at the very beginning of the game, so there's no like build up to this, at the very beginning of the game, that she wants to develop a pretty much a bug cracking program or some bug cracking software called Code Shifter, which she would then use to resolve bug issues that the company has been having as of late that's been interfering with their game releases or the timeliness of their game releases. In this actual space, you control her as she walks around the office talking to different employees when the story calls for it. And AC is just a way of learning about what the other employees of the company are like just get like little gab vignettes. You can sometimes find items when you walk around and talk and look around the office, and I'll get to what the items are shortly. And there's one other feature that I'll bring up in a little bit as well that you can do from the office. The other world that takes place in the game is the actual computer internet itself, basically the network itself that houses all the actual, I guess, PCs of the different employees in the company. Each employee's PC folder structure essentially makes up a game, one of the worlds in the game. So, for example, the first level in the game is called Mozzie's folder. Mozzie is one of the employees of the company. He's the first person who starts experiencing bugs occurring in his work. So Stella takes her software, which takes on the form of a person named Sarah. Sounds weird when you say it this way. And she uses that person in the game world or in the LAN network world to hunt down the malicious bugs and viruses and destroys them. And that is where the second aspect of the game takes place. It is a side-scrolling platformer where you control Sarah and she runs around destroying viruses and bugs, hopefully eventually getting to the end and the culprit that's causing the problem for that particular level of the game. Now, as you run around, the gameplay is actually fairly simple and straightforward. Sarah can do a basic attack. She can do an upwards attack, a downwards attack, kind of like how you think like Smash Brothers style with the controller direction and attack button. It also gets one special attack, which consumes some health when you use it. Now, as you run around fighting monsters using these attacks, you also will sometimes find actual bugs you have to destroy. Basically, that's like the main aspect of the levels. You want to destroy as many of those as you can, and that's partly how your score gets developed. But the main gimmick slash quirk of this title is the fact that as you're running around in these game worlds, or these, I keep wanting to call them game worlds, but it's land folders. As you run around these land folder worlds, you will sometimes come across data that can be taken over and utilized to control other characters. And who are these characters? Well, they are a bevy of various guest characters from Arc System Works games. These could be, I don't know, the Double Dragon characters, Billy and Jimmy, because they're apparently related to Arc System Works now. a number of BlazBlue characters. You have the River City Girls. Basically, Alex and Ryan from River City Ransom, and a ridiculous number more. There's about 30 total characters you can come across in the game and control in this manner. Now, when you're using these characters, they fall under a variety of different classifications. Light characters, which means they can do like multiple jumps, and they can also ride airway, like airstreams, for example. There are heavy characters who can't jump or squat, but their attacks usually do more damage. Then they also have elements, like some characters are fire-based, some are electric-based, and that just mainly is used like as far as like story elements and the occasional like enemy being weak to different attacks. Now, that may sound complicated, but it's really not, because one of the things about this game that I wish it did was make it so that the characters differentiate it more. But I guess when you have 30 random little characters in like a generic little platform game, they don't want to go but too hard on this stuff. So all the characters are just kind of like one note shot offs. Like you're basically, for example, you'll get like Ryan from River City Ransom. He uses the stone hand with his normal attack, which is like a rapid punch. And he has a kick attack if you use like his up attack. I'm sorry, his down attack. And if you use his up attack, he's like uppercut. I rarely use the supers because I'm really stingy with life. I'll get to why in a second. But essentially, you just kind of run around. You whack dudes. And every once in a while, you'll switch between the characters just to kind of get a feel for what the other ones do. Or if you come across a virus, you have to use Sarah, because she's the one that can actually destroy the viruses in the level. So you'll be doing that quite a bit. Gameplay itself is not complicated. It is very simple, straightforward platforming stuff. Though, at the end of every level, they do grade you. And depending on how well you do, most specifically, you have to get an S rank, so a perfect score, essentially, on each stage. You can unlock a skill, they call them in this game. But it's basically just like stat augmentation, like bonus to a character's speed or to their attack power or to their hit points. And when you get it, you can go into the character customization and equip a bunch of these things to kind of give your character a decent lowdown on attack and strength and such. Now, one thing that bugs me about this game, primarily, is the fact that damage is hard to avoid because the character's kind of... mobility is kind of odd. Like, you can't use the cross pad in a 2D platformer. They make you use the analog stick. I've tried to find it in the control configurations. I can't do it. So what ends up happening a lot of times, you'll be walking up to an enemy, you'll be trying to do damage to it, and since all of your attacks are pretty much, with a few exceptions, are melee-based, you're going to ultimately end up walking up to a guy to punch him, and instead you'll kind of walk into him and take damage before you actually hit him properly. It's annoying as heck. Could the player get used to it? I'm sure you will, but it's not going to be overnight, and you're still going to screw up even once you get used to it. That's just the nature of the beast in this game. So that's pretty much why I rarely ever want to use specials, because I need all the health I can get because I keep screwing up and taking blows. But that is honestly kind of my only real gripe about the game. It's that, and I guess there's one more, but it's, again, just reiterating an earlier point, which is that the characters are ridiculously simplistic in execution. If anything, it's more about the coolness of using the different characters from these different franchises so you can hear their 8-bit theme renditions when you select them and start using them. In fact, that was kind of the biggest joy I got out of the game, was getting, say, for example, to go back to the earlier joke about this being a good tie-in, you get a Bobo from Double Dragon, and his music is an 8-bit, it's kind of funny, it's like a remixed 8-bit rendition of the Stage 5 theme from Double Dragon, which I've always been a big fan of.
That's awesome.
So it's like stuff like that. I was like, this is pretty cool. I like this. Now, there's one other element to the game I should mention too. And that is a side game that they included in this called Colorful Fighters, which is a game that they describe it as pretty much being like a game that this studio developed. So what happens is when you start the game out, you have four characters available in this thing. And there's a sort of a Smash Brothers style beat 'em up where you just fight until you knock all the other characters out. Like, you kill each other until you win. There's a life version of it where you ride a lives, and a stock or in a time version where the most KOs in the time limit wins. And you start out with four characters, but you can earn more by finding characters and beating them up in the unlockable EX stages that exist in the different land folder worlds. So you go to these levels, beat up their digital data or whatever, and then they become unlockable or playable in the Colorful Fighters mode. So unfortunately, though, due to the thing being rather simplistic, you're probably going to end up booting this up and specifically playing it to say, I'm using, you know, the River City Girls versus, you know, Noel Vermillion, just because it's just quirky to say that you're doing that. But you're not going to be playing this game as a technical brawler, which is kind of funny to say since Arc System Works developed this. No. But you're not going to be playing this as a technical fighter. You're going to be playing this like a wacky character matchup game. And that's honestly kind of okay. It's not bad in its own form. If anything, it's more like I said earlier, it's an excuse to play a game that is fundamentally sound, but it's a layer of cake of having these cameo characters playable with the music to go along with them. Because I would also say, if it weren't for those extra characters and the elements of sound that you get from the 8-bit themes and just all the characters you can see cameo in this, it would probably take a huge hit in that regard, because at its core, it is a very simple game. There's not a lot, you know, to differentiate it from a bunch of other platformers and such.
Yeah.
Even aside from the theme. But with you, when you add that particular element to this, it adds the level of charm that makes it definitely something that's worth playing if you're a fan of classic and not so classic games from this franchise or from this company. So, and of course, before, because as you know, Arc System Works took on like Million and all that kind of stuff, Technos Japan. So, I think that gives it its value. In that regard, like, I enjoyed my time playing this game. I enjoyed unlocking the characters I got. I enjoyed hearing the music from them. And that's enough, especially considering that the price point is right.
Yeah, so at that $15 price point, what do you think?
I think it's a solid try. If you're a big storied fan of classic games in that regard, then it's a buy it just for what I mentioned alone.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Chris, back to you with the game 0000, developed by Alvarop Games, published by Rattleika Games, released February 4th on PS4 and Vita, 5th on Xbox One, 7th on the Switch for $4.99. 0000 is a unique 1-bit lo-fi platformer that sets to challenge players in a plethora of levels that will require skill and careful maneuvering. My cat is attacking my cord.
No. Cat problems today.
My headset is just like being pulled in one direction. I'm like, what the hell's going on, cat? Anyway, dodge, shoot, jump your way through randomly selected levels as you progress or die. Chris, tell us about 0000.
Well, first off, I have to say, bold of them to name the game after my like phone like unlock password. So, did you like that one?
Yes, I appreciate nice. That one. I appreciate
it. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, 0000. Well, they say 1-bit, but I think they used more than 1-bit in this, to be honest. However, yes, this is a very simplistic looking game. There's no story, I don't think. But from the title graphic, I can only surmise that this is that the collection of 6 or 7 pixels that make up the main character is telling the story of a cowboy who is in space somehow, not Bravestar, like I think is actually somebody else. And that's for my 80s cartoon fans there. I heard crickets. Anyways, so, but yeah, so the point of the game is that you are dropped into, it is, of course, a single screen puzzle platformer. And, you know, the idea is to basically jump across the stage and, you know, make your way towards a ball. It seems to be a kind of light. And as soon as you touch it, a door appears, usually on the opposite end of the stage. And then you have to make your way back to the beginning of the stage and go through the door. And then once you do that, the level is cleared. And then the game sends you to a random one of the other 99 stages. There's 100 stages total, and you never know which is going to be the next one. which is actually pretty cool. The even cooler thing, and this is, I think, the most winning gimmick out of this whole thing, is that, you know, of course, this being a puzzle platformer, it's got spikes everywhere, enemies, things shooting at you, traps, all kinds of cool stuff. And by the way, you are given a gun. There's two buttons in the game. One is to jump and the other is to shoot. But shooting,
very complicated.
I know. But sometimes when you shoot an enemy, it will, like, they'll just, it'll just cause them to shoot in like four directions or something like that. And that might, either help or impede you in some way, just depending on the layout of the level. And of course how hard the level is, which is going to be random. So, you know, it's not just for taking down enemies. It's, you know, also for breaking down walls and things like that. But yes, here's the clever thing. Like any puzzle platformer of this ilk, obviously death is going to come fast and often. You'll touch a spike and then instantly, you know, you're dead and already back and able to move, right? The thing is, every single time you die, you also get a random level.
Mm-hmm.
The level ends whether you pass it or die. So, yeah, if you get hit by a spike, you're going to appear in the next level and you have to try and get through that one. And it might cycle back around to that level that, you know, eventually it will, of course, through process of elimination. It might cycle back to the level that you just left, but you can't depend on it. So, you know, you might end up playing like level, you know, making four attempts on level four, you know, out of 30 attempts, the game total, which I think is really cool. I've actually not seen that in these kind of games. So I was pretty impressed by that. So of course there's two game modes, fairly simple. One of them is infinite lives. That's the normal version where, you know, you just basically die and show up in a different level or pass it and show up in a different level. And of course there's a little status bar at the bottom that shows you, which levels you have beaten, you know, it fills in the blanks. And, yeah, like some of the levels are really, really hard, like very big and like very convoluted. Some of them have really not obvious ways of getting through them. And, you know, those levels will come and go. You know, it's one of those weird things where it does kind of add a little bit of pressure to try and get it right the first time, because obviously you don't get a second time unless that game just rolls, unless that level rolls back around again.
Yeah.
But I like it. It really shakes up the whole idea, the whole concept of like the whole, like just doing a revolving door of like starting a stage over until you finally, power through it. This one doesn't allow you to memorize levels, really, unless you can memorize all 100 of them.
Yeah.
You know, it just makes it where it's like, well, we're just going to keep giving you different challenges until, you know, until you're done, and it keeps you engaged. So that's the one mode. And of course, that's the one I spent the most time in, because the other mode is extreme mode. And extreme mode, same thing, all 100 levels, all done randomly, but you only have one life. If you die on any of the stages, you're starting the entire thing over. And that is, of course, for the hardcore extremes that, that, you know, the title suggests. The
sadists.
Yeah, exactly. Or just the people who get really, really good at the game. I mean, that can happen, even on, you know, smaller indie games like this. But, you know, again, I really think that the one bit is a little bit of an exaggeration, because the game is fast. It's really fast. It moves at a smooth, consistent frame rate. Controls are really tight. And the music is like kind of ambient electronic weirdness. Definitely not like an 8-bit type thing. It's like, I don't know, a little bit noise, a little bit ambient. It's like in that sort of genre of like DJ music that I don't know how to define, despite being somebody who has been into music for his entire life.
Proud of you.
But it's fun. It's like the music like keeps you going. And of course it doesn't stop between stages. It just sometimes changes, I think. And, yeah, this one was really pretty fun. But like I said, yeah, it's a very simple concept, but a very hooky type of a gimmick to the randomized levels after death.
Nice. Then for $5, what do you say?
Well, like most of the time when I get a rattle like a game, the price is so cheap that it's a, you know, it's kind of a fuck it, but this is actually quality. So I would say that your $5 would go well, to this game if this is your kind of genre. Again, I really like that it keeps you engaged and breaks up the staleness of like having to start a stage over until you finally win it. And it's also kind of cool because, you know, you might end up in the like level whatever, like they never have numbers. It's, you can only just kind of tell what they are based on if you've beaten them, and they fill in the little, thing on the
coin slot or not.
Yeah, exactly. Like that kind of tells you what stage it is, but I beat like stage 100. So, and it wasn't hard. So I don't think that the numbers correlate with difficulty.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's kind of fun to see you roll a stage that you've lost to like four or five times already, but it's been like 30 minutes or an hour. And then you're like, oh yeah, this time we're going to get it. And then you die instantly and you're like, well, see you again someday. So I had a lot of fun with this one.
I had fun with it too. I thought it was enjoyable. I like when you beat a bunch of stages and you just see how scattered those little coin icons are. I think they're coins. Yeah. I think that you're picking up a coin and then going to the exit. That's my guess.
I think it is. Okay. Yeah, that's probably what it is. You know, it is a monochrome game, by the way, folks. It's black and white. So it's not really telling a lot of details in it. But at least I was able to tell that the 6 or 7 pixels is supposed to be a cowboy.
Yeah.
I mean, that was pretty impressive. Also, for, you know, achievement people out there, this game was pretty generous with the achievements, as far as I could tell.
Well, it's Rattalaika, so those are generally very free with their achievements and their trophies.
I didn't look at the platinum list, though. I'm sure that there's some pretty up there.
No, there aren't.
No, there not aren't. The Rattalaika.
Nope.
Oh, wow, that's
they're funny. Always like 15 to 30 minute completions, an hour at most.
Yeah, I think the most is to beat 21 levels in this game.
Oh, wow.
Something like that.
I guess
like if you get through at least a quarter of it, it's like, yeah, you're good, fine. Bye.
Yeah, here's all your achievements and all your trophies.
Wake so it really is a game for the hardcore. It really is for people who just want to be like, I'm going to do this.
Yeah, pretty much.
Sweet.
Yep. Anyway, we got one final game to talk about, and that's a quick update on Skellboy, developed by Umaki Games, published by Fabraz. It released January 30th on the Switch for $20. Chris, you reviewed this, what, 2 weeks ago, a week ago?
I think it was a mere 1 week ago.
And you mentioned you really enjoyed it, but it had some performance issues. And we did say that it was a pre-release game and that there was always a chance there would be a release day patch to address those issues. And it looks like there was a day one patch to address those issues, huh?
Was it a day one, actually?
Yeah, close enough.
Okay, close enough.
Week one.
Yeah, I was going to say we're on day, like, what, 5 or something of it being released. I don't know. What is even time? Yes, they put it out on the Switch News, so I looked at it and I, you know, waited a couple days for it to finally drop, and they did indeed patch some issues in this game. The one that I specifically complained about was the frame rate, where the game would chug for, like, you know, no reason at all. And now it actually does. It's not, of course, like moving like super fast or super smooth, but it is consistent and definitely moving a lot faster now, which is nice. They also fixed a problem with javelin type weapons, which I might have complained about. I actually, you know, because there's a, like, you can have different types of weapons like axes and swords and things like that. And the javelin kind, which, by the way, your starter weapon is a pencil. It was really hard to aim because of the way that your character would move around. Because again, this game plays, it has the sort of 3D / isometric / flat characters properties of like Paper Mario, but it's an actual action game. And yeah, it was very hard to hit things with a lance, and they fixed that now where it's a little simpler and goes a little faster. And there's this whole other grocery list of like different issues that I wasn't even aware of. Apparently the first boss had a tendency to suicide itself quite often. Yeah, like the first boss would just beat itself, and they patched that. I guess.
Oh, that's a bummer. That's not a bug. Right? That's a feature.
Right? I'm a Skyrim player, man. That's a feature. And they upgraded some balance issues with certain equipment. Lots and lots and lots and lots of stuff. So this game is officially, in my view, upgraded to a buy it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Every good thing I said about the game is perfectly still there. It's a hilarious game. It looks cool. It sounds cool. And it clearly was made with a lot of love. And it is definitely a unique adventure. So now I am going to tell you folks, make sure to check out Skellboy. And yeah, the performance issues largely just completely gone. So
awesome.
There you go.
All right. Well, that is it for y'all three. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Cole, are you still
no
awake?
Problem.
I am, fish. But barely. I'm tired. I've been up since 5.
Yeah,
and I gotta get up at 5. So
your time is up, and Tim Ekibis's time is now. So before he jumps in here, Pernell, do you have any final words? We'll give it to you.
Swedish Fish Tales are a freaking amazing. You should
Swedish Fish Tales.
Yeah, they're like Swedish fish, but they split the flavor. There's two flavors per fish.
Whoa. So
we're talking blue raspberry strawberry fish, or a watermelon pineapple fish, or a raspberry mango fish.
Whoa, a second flavor of Swedish fish. I didn't even know there was a second flavor at all.
I didn't either until Swedish Fish Tales became a thing. And yeah, baby, they are delicious. How delicious? I don't know if I'll be on a freaking diet. They just fucked it right up.
Isn't that how all diets work, though?
Pretty much. They get Swedish fished.
They get Swedish fished. There you go.
So good.
All right, moving on. We are bringing in our good friend Tim Ekibis. Tim, how are you doing?
I'm just confused. I'm still reeling.
You got some breaking news for us?
Oh, yeah. If we want to break the news. Yeah, like literally when we were about to hit record, the word got out. Yeah, it's literally at 8 p.m. was when the tweet went out that that Nintendo's adding 4 more games to the Nintendo Switch Online collections! !
Which sounds great, and then you realize that means across both services.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, they do so, 2 and 2. That's fine. I mean, they only really update these once every couple months. I mean, when they released Super Nintendo, it was like, what, September? And then I guess it was 3 months until they did another pack in December. So you're 2 months later, we get for the Super Nintendo, Poppin' Twinbee. Whoa, strong start. Cool. Shooter. I don't even think that, I think that didn't come out in the U.S. You were saying that two of them were Japanese games, right? Is that what you said? Yeah, I think that was one of them.
Pair of U.S. debuts.
A pair of U.S. debuts. And I believe it's both the Super Nintendo games.
Yep.
Yeah, so U.S. debuts for Poppin' Twinbee, a top-down shooter, and Smash Tennis. It's not what you were asking for, but in my opinion, that's still pretty cool. As a space shooter fan, and like Poppin' Twinbee, that's awesome. That's really cool. But not perhaps as exciting if you are looking for Earthbound and Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy VI and shit. Speaking of which, the NES editions are Shadow of the Ninja and Eliminator Boat Duel. Like, holy hell! Like, no one who... those are bad choices.
Eliminator Boat Duel.
Eliminator Boat Duel is perhaps the I skipped forward just because I couldn't take the anticipation. And I saw boats. And I was like, oh, is this Cobra Triangle? Cobra Triangle's kind of cool, but Eliminator Boat Duel.
Here, let me read the copy. In this powerboat racing game, get behind the wheel of one of the fastest machines on the water to earn boatloads of in-game cash. Drivers earn thousands of dollars for competing, and you'll use your winnings to repair and upgrade your boat to push your competitive edge to its maximum. A little aggression goes a long way. Just try not to get sunk yourself, or you'll be swimming back to dry land.
I... Zero people were like, we need Eliminator Boat Duel that's just wild. Like,
by Sculptured Software and Pico Interactive. I think even those guys are like, really?
I mean, like, is this really all you could afford to license for the Nintendo's, the NES Online? That's all you could get? Really? That is baffling.
Yeah.
Like, I'm mostly okay with the Super Nintendo choices just because they are first time in the U.S. But man, these two are real stinkers. That's a real, I mean, yeah, I was, yeah, saying,
it's impressive. Like, it's impressive how disappointed I am.
It is impressive how disappointed I am in this announcement. like, it's always like a little bit exciting. And the first thing in the video is popping Twinbee. I'm like, that's awesome. And I was like, okay, a tennis game. All right. That's cool. The Shadow of the Ninja. I'm like, what? Eliminator boat duel. What are you thinking? Like, I am not the person that is like, oh, you gotta, why isn't every AAA game on here? Why aren't you just putting Mega Man 1 through 6 on this collection? Why aren't you doing that? You know, just completely ignoring that there's a Mega Man collection on Switch. I'm not one of those people, but man, I feel like you could have done better for those NES games, Nintendo. I feel like you could have done better.
Yeah, they really could have.
Like, I don't think all three Ninja Gaidens are on there. I think there's only one of them. Get Ninja Gaiden 2 over Shadow the Ninja. Come on now. Ugh.
Do something.
Eliminator Boat Duel, just... It might have been better if you just didn't put out a game. Maybe you might have just... No, we only got one this time around. We could have gotten Eliminator Boat Duel, but we were like, no, that would be stupid.
That would be a slap in the face to our users.
Yeah, but here we are. Take it.
Yeah, so take it and you'll enjoy it.
You will, because you don't have a choice. You don't have a choice.
So yeah, some breaking news, but how are you doing? How's things going?
They did 6 more games in December. I'm doing well, other than this. Man, I mean, December was a banger. I'm just like looking back. Breath of Fire 2, Kirby Superstar, Super Punch-Out, Star Fox 2, yeah. Jury Decilius. That's a pretty decently cool game. And Crystallis, another decently cool game.
Yeah.
Jury Decilius is kind of a little out there, but it's a cool action platformer. Man, Shadow Ninja Eliminator Boat Duel. Holy crap.
Eliminator Boat Duel.
Air Boat Duel. Man, why would... Ugh.
Game of the year right there.
Right, well... Yeah, things are... Other than that, things are fine.
Night was going good.
Yeah. Night was going good, and then I...
And then this breaking news had to go and shit all over everything.
Yeah, well, hopefully in April they'll have something better. I mean, they couldn't have something worse, so...
True.
They can only go up for here.
It'd be nice if they went to at least monthly announcements.
I guess. Well, they could do, like... You know, I guess you could do that. You could do, like, one Super Nintendo, one NES game a month. Like, that would be better than stretching them out between months, like going 2 months and then like, here's 2 and 2. What if you just had like one a month? That'd be something to think about, look forward to,
I guess.
I miss when virtual console games were like one a week, two a week.
Yeah, that was wild. There was some wild stuff on there. I went on a binge right before it shut down and bought a bunch of things that you can't get anywhere else. Which are now safely, quote unquote, locked away on my Wii U because I did a system transfer.
Mm.
And then immediately was like, why did I do this? I don't know why I decided to do this because there's no point. I think I thought for some reason that it would work on the Wii U gamepad and I'd be able to play just on that.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
Would have been nice. It doesn't work that way. But also, I have had, well, one, my Wii U does not have that many hours on it. And I did have a Wii that broke before. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, there were reasons in the end to do that, and yeah.
Good stuff. Well, should we talk about a game?
We should talk about at least two of them, or can we only talk about one of them?
Well, we're talking about one of them, and then we're talking about DLC.
Yes, okay, yes. By proxy.
So, yeah, we're talking about two games.
Yeah.
All right, well, the first one of these two is The Tiny Bang Story, developed by Calibri Games, published by Alotta Games, Released October 4th on the Switch for $9.99, life on Tiny Planet was calm and carefree until the great disaster occurred. Tiny Planet was hit by a meteor. The world fell apart, and now its future depends only on you. Tim, this is a little bit of an older one, but we're still checking it out. What do you think of the Tiny Bang story?
What do I think of the Tiny Bang story? This game came out a few months ago. This fresh 2019 banger 4 months after release. They're like, oh, do you want a code there? We'll look at it. What are we doing here? Tiny Bang Story. So I was a little... this game is adapted from a phone game, it seems. It's a little adventure, kind of like point-and-click adventure slash hidden object puzzle game deal. So yeah, the aforementioned meteor destroys the aforementioned world. And smashes it conveniently into a bunch of jigsaw puzzle pieces. We can only be so lucky when the end to our Earth comes nigh. So it gets smashed to pieces, and you will go into a section of the world that's only like the game is broken down into stages. And each stage will be like four or five main screens, I guess I should say. And then there will be like little kind of nooks and crannies within them that you'll look in. And basically you will, go between the screens, you will poke at stuff. You can do that literally or figuratively. So it does utilize the touch screen if you're in handheld mode. So hooray for that.
Nice.
Though it doesn't always seem to be fully sensitive to that. Like, I don't know what it is. I feel like sometimes when I'm just like move, because otherwise you use the joystick to, move a cursor around and push a button to poke on things. Sometimes I feel like I have to poke on things a couple times. I don't know if that's just like a general something with the programming or whatever. Adapting it from highly sensitive touchscreens to, this one. Which is not as much meant to be poked with your finger. I mean, I don't know. It's... Switch touch stuff is weird. Definitely. I mean, like the game, the resolution of the game is pretty high. And like some of the objects you're clicking on are pretty small on the Switch screen. So maybe that has something to do with it. It just doesn't have that like level of touch precision that you expect from like an iPad or a phone or something like that. Either way, you can touch it or you can use a stick and buttons, which is good. So you go around, you poke around at things, and your primary objective in every level, I guess. Well, your primary objective is to move on to the next level, but your next primary objective is each level will have a number of jigsaw pieces in it that are kind of scattered around and hidden with the world. Like they will blend in, and you might just see like a corner of it poking out from behind a building, or there will be a small jigsaw shaped brown patch on the ground or something like that. You just kind of have to notice like the lines or know what to look for. Well, not know what to look for, but just, you got to look around. And that's in which it kind of gets a little hidden. It starts to get hidden object-y. You will also find objects that you poke at, and you will need to find other items to put into it. Like, you'll open up a panel, and you will need to find, like, three gears. You need to find three gears to throw into this panel. Or you open up this panel here, and you need to find, like, 20 switches or something like that sitting around the world. Or a bunch of balls.
like the emphasis you put on that.
Balls. So, balls. Yeah, in order to use said object, you will need to find other said objects around the world. Yeah, there's like, pipes. Pipes is another one. That just different stuff. So that, once you're along looking for the puzzle pieces, now you're also looking for like, oh, okay, well, I need to find gears. I need to find crank wheels. I need to find, balls, pipes, whatever. I need to find a certain amount of those so I can go back to that object, dump them all inside. And in most cases, that will transition you into some kind of a puzzle interface. Like the pipe one, you have to arrange the pipes so that one thing leads to the other. Think of that the BioShock hacking mini game sort of deal. You're playing a little game of Pipe Dream in there. or you need to, I'm trying to think of some of the other ones, you know, arrange the gears in a certain way. You have to, there's a lot of like movie slidey, touchscreen friendly puzzles, I guess I should say, intermixed with just poking around and finding objects. And, there's one in the first, I think it's the first level, where you find the tattered pieces of a painting. So it's just putting it together like a jigsaw puzzle, but because it's like ripped pieces of canvas, it kind of has a different angle to it than just the usual kind of sharper edges of a puzzle. There's one where you look through a telescope and it just turns into like a little mini game where you're just poking balloons to get, I think it's the fuses for something, and then that opens up a door, and then you have to put this train back together. So it does a good job of like, okay, you're just going around between these, you know, this handful of screens, you're poking at things, you're looking for puzzle pieces, you're finding objects, and then you put those all then peppered around, and not always just exclusively when you kind of find a number of said object that you need to find, but also just sometimes to open doors or chests or whatever. You'll have another puzzle in the way where you have to slide things around and solve a puzzle. So it does a good job of kind of shaking things up along the way. It's not just, it's not like a point and click adventure, like a Broken Age or a Monkey Island where you're wandering around and picking up objects and talking to people and then trying to figure out how to use them. It's pretty straightforward what you need to do. It's just a matter of going between the screens and poking around and finding them. Yeah. To help you along your way, there's these little blue flies that constantly will appear on the screen, and if you tap them, they go into a little meter that fills up, and when the meter fills up, you can tap on that, and a little red fly, pink fly, a different colored fly, will buzz out and kind of circle around something on the screen that you might have missed. So you might get to the point where it's like, okay, the only thing I have left between all these screens is like a puzzle piece and like a gear over here, and you don't know where it is. So at that point, you can just kind of grind out flies, and they appear infinitely. So there is no limit to them, and then you can just go to a screen and then attempt to unleash the fly to help you along your way. And sometimes
unleash
you'll be
the fly.
Unleash the fly. And if there's more than one thing on the screen, man, a lot of times what happens is I'll unleash the fly and it'll start buzzing down. I'll be like, oh shit, there's a puzzle piece right there. And then like, you'll see it like right away and you'll feel like an idiot. Then it's like, ah, crap, I got to poke more bugs. Should have seen that before. Damn it. And then once you finish with a level, you will go back out to kind of like the main map, at which point you will need to take those 25 puzzle pieces and lock them into place in order to restore another piece of the world. Once you restore that piece of the world, then you can move forward into it and do all that shit over again. Basically, in short, there's 5 levels. And it's a pretty chill game, both from like, there's kind of a nice, like whimsical art style. There's nice whimsical music. It's relaxing. It's pleasant to sit down and just kind of relax. It is a relaxing game to sit there. It doesn't require too much brain power or thought. You're just kind of going through the screens, poking around, poking at this. There is a button you can hit at any point that will just highlight things you can interact with, which is nice.
Nice.
It won't highlight the things you need to find, but it's like, oh, okay, well, there's a door here, you know, on a cabinet that I can open, so I know to click on that. So that stuff will not elude you. Between the flies and the and also on the puzzles, like, you can also hit, I think it's that same button, no, it's the hint button, it's the unleash the fly button, when you're in a puzzle and it will give you a hint towards the solution. Sometimes it just gives you the damn solution, in a way, sort of. It feels like, it's just like, I think on the aforementioned pipe dream one, it's like literally just like, oh, well, this is what I need to do with the pipes. I just have to keep referencing it and get them all in order. So it might go a little bit too far sometimes with the hints, but you will get through it. As far as things that aggravate me, sometimes it is kind of hard to see things. It's hard for things to stand out. I mean, I guess the objects are supposed to be hidden, but just playing it in portable mode, It was tough to see things sometimes, just because I imagine this, you know, the resolution's being scaled down from a more high res phone screen to the Switch screen, which only does like what, 720 or 480.
It's got to be at least HD 720.
Sure. Yeah. It is. So that's kind of like a minor thing, and just kind of like the sensitivity of the touch sometimes was just like, oh God, come on. The only thing that really pissed me off is that you'd be in a puzzle, and if you back out of it, it completely resets the whole thing, which is somehow easier to accidentally do than you might think, or maybe I'm just stupid. Like there's one where you go into like a little like garage, and then you have to put the train together, right? And, you know, there's train pieces scattered all around this shop, and I'm grabbing them and dragging them in and dropping them onto the train husk to put the train back together. And you can pull up the hint thing to look at a completed picture of the train. So when it got down to it, I'm like, okay, I'm missing like two more pieces. What should I even be like looking for? And I would pull it up, and then I'd hit like B to back out of that, and it wouldn't work like right away, so I'd hit B again, but then it would work, so I'd hit B twice, and what that would do was back me out of the hint sheet, and then also back me right the hell out of the garage, and I'd go back in, and I'd have to start building the train over again. This happened to me like 3 times. eventually, I got smart enough to be like, okay, well, if you just tap on the side of the screen, then it will also make the hint thing go away. But sometimes you tap on the side of the screen, depending on the room, and you might back out of it that way. And then it will also reset the puzzle. And that was like really freaking annoying. And sometimes you do need to back out to reset the puzzle, depending on the puzzle, because you might have screwed something up. But most of the time it was just like, oh, God damn it. I'm so stupid. Like, I'm just like, look at this thing. And I'm like trying to like, it shouldn't do that. It shouldn't just like back you out, or it should give you a warning, or it should not reset the whole puzzle. Something. That was what aggravated me the most. And it's not that big a deal. But it is kind of annoying.
Yeah. Well, that aggravation aside, $9.99 on the Tiny Bang story. What do you think of it?
I'm going to give it, I know I was pretty positive on it. I think I'm going to give it about a try it. Cause it is kind of simple. And it's not, I don't like, it's not that long all told. Stages would probably be a little bit less than 5 hours. Like, it's a nice little experience, for maybe like a little less than $10, I would have been like, yeah, sure, buy it. But for $10, I'm kind of like, maybe wait a little bit. But it's definitely worth checking out. I am not a guy who usually is super into point-and-click stuff. I just have a tendency to get bored with it. But I didn't really get bored with this. Like, it was just like relaxing and mindless and engaging enough that I enjoyed it quite a bit. Though that might be a turn off for some people or a turn on for others. I don't know, but it's definitely worth your attention, if not your money at some point.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. We got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Dead Cells, the Bad
Seed. You might have heard of it.
Yes. Dead Cells, the Bad Seed DLC, developed and published by Motion Twin. It released February 11th on all platforms for Dead Cells for $4.99.
That's today.
Yes. Yes, it is. You're very observant. Although when the episode comes out, it'll be yesterday.
What?
Or no, 2 days ago. I can't even math right.
That tennis game was already out on the Japanese, Super Nintendo, Switch Online, Super Family Tennis by Bandai Namco. They're giving us
stuff that's already out.
It was already out in Japan, but now it's, I guess they must have done whatever localization they need to do, and now it's coming out over here. So they already did the deal with Namco, and now we're just getting their sloppy seconds.
Those dicks.
I just realized that because I had the Wikipedia page open. I glanced back at it. Yeah, we got Super Tennis. Now there's two damn tennis games on there because they got it at the launch, and then we got, sorry, Motion Twin, and then we got Super Tennis, and they got Super Family Tennis, and then now we're getting that tennis all as well. Two tennis games on there.
Necessary. Very necessary.
Yeah, Smash. Yeah, that's ridiculous. Maybe it's anyway, not the same exact game, but it sure seems like it. All right, go
anyway,
on.
Anyway, Dead Cells, the Bad Seed, developed and published by Motion Twin, released February 11th on all platforms for Dead Cells for $4.99. The Bad Seed introduces players to an additional path to take, sporting all new optional biomes, granting them incredible new weapons, and sticks them in front of really, really, really dangerous and possibly questionably unhard, but definitely gross new enemies. Tim, tell us about the Bad Seed DLC.
There are ticks. ticks are traditionally pretty gross. Yeah, so Dead Cells, in case somehow you're not familiar, this is a game that launched in 2018. It had been in early access since 2017. I actually bought it in early access on PC and played a bit of it then, and then bought the full version when that came out on a different platform. I bought the Switch version because that's where I have time, not on my PC where I don't usually. And yeah, I played a lot of Dead Cells when I first got. I put a good 50 hours into it, I think. And then I kind of didn't really get back to it in 2019. Like, the update schedule was not synchronized between the other platforms and the Switch. So it's like that the previous, like, the one of the bigger updates was like the Giants update. I don't remember what the heck the full name of it is, like Rise of the Giants or Wrath of Giant or Fall of Giant, something. When that came out, but that was coming out on other platforms and it wasn't out on the Switch yet. And I was like, and then like I updated it recently on Switch and kind of started a run, but didn't get that far with it. And then it's like, oh, Bad Seed DLC. Well, it's time to go back. So they've done a lot of updates to this game already. 16 free updates, I believe, is the exact number. Some larger than others, some just balance tweaks, some bigger, smaller, whatever. But they have been supporting this game. This is the first time they are charging for a piece of DLC. The Bad Seed DLC includes, importantly, two new early game biomes, which is the, I don't remember the exact extravagant names of them. One's a garden, the other's a swamp. you know, they have pretty flowerful names, but and I guess to save you some trouble, you can get it. It's not hard to get into them. Like the garden, the greenhouses, a branch off of the very first level, which is the prisoner's quarters. You just have to, there will be a body somewhere in the prisoner's quarters that you will get a key off of. And you use that key to get into the gardens. The route to the gardens is initially very obvious because there's these bouncy plant things in a what's a opposite of a corridor but vertical? A shaft.
A shaft.
Yes, a shaft that will take you up to it. So that's how you'll see it, and you just have to find a key. And that's how you get up into it. The other one, the swamp level, actually branch off of, I think, any of the other second stage ones, either the Promenade of the Dead or the Toxic Sewers. Because actually, I was in the middle of a run when we got this DLC code, and I updated my game, and like there was already a door to the swamp like in my run.
It wow.
Just plopped in there somehow. I was like, which was very confusing because I thought maybe that had already been in the game and there was no possible way the DLC had already wormed its way in. But eventually I figured that out. So yeah, it adds those two biomes and it adds a new boss, which is Mama Tick. This is a giant freaking mutated tick thing. So yeah, the important thing here is that they are early game areas. Dead Cells is a run-based game, so you're going to play through this game a whole mess of times. And this is definitely where it needed to have some variety. People who played through this game have no doubt played through the sewers and the promenade like a million bajillion times, because they're the only two options off the first area. From there, things kind of branch out more. You have more options from where you could go. And you definitely get more variety in the mid-game before things narrow down for the end. So having two new areas to go through, like, you don't even have to go to any of those old-ass areas, because the swamp will leads directly into the Mama Tick fight. Yes, it does lead directly to that. So you won't see any of that early game stuff before the concierge again for a while if you don't want to. And true to form, I keep just going through these two areas over and over and over again because they're new. And yeah, there's new blueprints to find as you go through and you beat up these enemies. You're going to get new items that you want to get. One of the standouts for me, well, I guess I'll mention a couple of them. there is a blowgun that you get from these dudes in the swamp, which does criticals from behind. So it's a ranged backstabbing weapon, which is really cool.
Nice.
The tick drops a few, the mama tick drops a few different things. Two of them are her left claw and her right claw, which critical off of one another. So if you craft both of them and you equip both of them, like, and you use them in tandem, you are going to fuck shit up. I have yet to find the, I have yet to get the right claw to drop. I keep getting like different palette. I keep getting other stuff off of her. I haven't gotten that yet. But it's cool. Like, I mean, yeah. And also because I haven't played this game in a while, I'm not 100% sure what is brand new. If there's other things brand new to this update that are just new to me, like last time I played this game, all the clothing palette swaps weren't in there. There's some other weapons and items I'm sure I'm getting that were already in there before this bad seed update. But the bottom line is that Motion Twin has already given a lot to this game and not charged for it. Like a ton of updates to this game already and not charged a cent past the entry price of the game. So charging $5 to just spice up the beginning of the game seems pretty fair. And the areas are definitely cool. I think I like the greenhouse a little bit more. Basically you pop into the greenhouse and you can go left or right. There'll be a large greenhouse to your left and a large greenhouse to your right. And there is a different exit on either side of it. And you know, there's cool enemies. Well, it has these, I was saying, there are some cool new enemies, and there's also these shitty fucking mushrooms that spawn spikes on like platforms around them that piss me off. And they are not cool. They are not new. They were in the sewers before, the ancient sewers. The swamp area is definitely pretty tough. There are mini bosses in that area, which are other giant ticks, non-mother division. And there's dudes that just drop out of the ceiling with spears. There are dudes with blowguns everywhere. And that area seems to have a real deficiency in where teleporters spawn. And it's a long area. It is very large in every instance of it that I've seen. It is a very big area. It's tough to just zip through. It's very large. Like, it goes up, and then it goes back down, and then it goes up again. Then it'll go back to swamp level. You'll fight another large tick and go out. But, you know, when it comes to a run-based game, variety is the spice of life. And this adds a lot of variety to the portion of the game that needed it the most. And they basically put this out and they said they're charging for it because this is going to help them fund even further development of the game, which they're now looking to add some more end game areas at the very tail end, which sounds great to me. And, you know, just getting back into this, I'm like totally addicted to Dead Cells again. So,
yeah, I guess the only question left is $5 on the DLC. What's your verdict?
Yeah, that's kind of a no-brainer, really, to me. I mean, it adds a lot to the game. It's only $5, and it's the first time they've charged for a DLC since launch. Like, yeah, you should buy this. Like, that is an easy chip-in. That is an expensive, you know, that's a cup of coffee right there.
Yeah.
You know, that ain't shit. Buy the Bad Seed DLC. Play more Dead Cells. If you don't have Dead Cells already, buy Dead Cells. Buy it with the DLC. Like, this game, it is so freaking good. This game is so good. It's like, it's like an awesome combat-based Metroidvania Symphony of the Night, like, procedurally-based combat game.
So good.
So fun. It is so good. Like, top to bottom, looks great, sounds great. The weapons, the variety of the weapons is so fun, and this just adds even more to that. It's great. I love this game, and the DLC is well worth it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
All right.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Tim, thanks for being here. Thanks to everyone else from the beginning of the show as well. I'm not going to name everyone because I just...
Fuck them.
Fuck them. Fuck them all. We're the only ones that matter, right, Tim?
Yeah, absolutely.
Give me some final words to end the show.
I'm still looking at, like, Switch or Nintendo Online. This is like as bad as like last July when they're like, here's Donkey Kong 3 and Wrecking Crew and I guess Mighty Bomb Jack. But people were just kind of like, this is worse than that. I think, Vice Project Doom is on there. I thought I remember that. That's a cool game. Oh my gosh. But now, yeah. Route 16 Turbo. They got Famicom Wars in Japan. Man, could you imagine if they localized that game?
Yeah, no shit.
People would be losing their minds if they localized Famicom Wars over here. Holy crap. But we got the tennis game.